This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. A little bit different slant today to Not My Beat. We don't have a guest on to talk about the biggest story. We're going to talk about something that is kind of the local versus the national push here amongst one of the local teams. I'll get more direct than that as opposed to being hypothetical and trying to set this up. The point is, there's a lot of people that watched the Caps game on ESPN last night with Sean McDonough and thought, man, Sean McDonough and Ray Ferraro, they're biased against the Capitals. And I know that Chris Russell was talking about it on his show. I saw that he put out a social post about it, and I was like, really? That's a topic? Because I watched that game. I will admit I did not have the sound on the entire time. We were on the phone with my in-laws for part of it. Very fun and lively conversation with lots of digs back and forth. Because that's what family banter is about. But no, we had the sound on and as I was watching the game for plenty of it, and never once did I think, man, this broadcast is crushing the Capitals. But I was like, I don't know. Maybe I wasn't as locked in. Maybe I was distracted. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I am biased towards Sean McDonough. Because, Anthony, where did Sean McDonough go to school?
He went to the one and only Syracuse University.
Yeah, perhaps because he's a member of the Mafia, the Newhouse Mafia, the Syracuse University Broadcast Mafia. I am just, Sean's great. Maybe. But then I clicked on Chris's social post, Anthony, and all the replies were like, oh, he was terrible. Ah, they're so biased. Ferraro sucks too. And I was like, damn. We had Sean on the show last week. Thought he was great. He said really nice things about being here in D.C. and how much he loves being at Capital One Arena and Caps fans. And so I was like, dang. And then I saw that Sean had actually been on Kevin Sheehan's show earlier today. And Anthony, lo and behold, not only is he on Kevin's show, Kevin asked him about this very thing. And so here's McDonough earlier in the day with Sheehan talking about the idea of whether or not the broadcast was biased.
The Caps were dominated in game one. The score didn't reflect that. And then in the first period last night, it felt like an extension.
It was more of the same. We were on for a lot of those Montreal games, and I think if they watched our telecast instead of Joe and Locker, and they made a good choice to watch Joe and Locker, they wouldn't have felt like we were biased. If anything, when the home team does well, and you played the call of the John Carlson goal last night, I certainly yelled more loudly than I would have if the other team scored, because you're yelling over the home crowd. So. Yeah, I also don't. It's another reason why I don't have social media, because I just don't pay any attention to that. I don't care who wins. I really don't, and I'd have no reason to be biased in favor of Carolina and against Washington. I don't.
Especially since Carolina's positioning for you is even worse than Washington.
It's even worse. All right. And quite frankly, I mean, if you're going to say, well, what would you like to see going forward? you know, Carolina plays a style that doesn't always translate to very exciting TV. You know, they play that grinded out, low scoring defensive game. It's not an up and down game, you know, as we've seen in these first two games. So, I mean, if anything, you know, you'd want the team that has a better chance to go up and down to be successful. But I honestly don't care, you know, and it's just, yeah, your hometown announcers are going to be more skewed toward your home team when you watch them, because that's what they should be doing.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't have a whole lot to add to what Sean McDonough just said. I would just like to reemphasize the final point that he made. If you think that the ESPN broadcast is biased towards Carolina, it is probably because you spend most of your sports watching life, especially for, I feel like this is worse in the NBA and the NHL. It happens less in the NFL, although everyone thinks Joe Buck hates their team. It's like a long-running bit. But I think that for the most part, this happens, say, for the NHL, where if you are a diehard Caps fan that you watch for even 30 games a year, nevertheless, 40, 50, 60, 70, you watch all 82. You're watching 70 of those games if you're watching 82 on Monumental Sports Network. Like, even a lot of the national TV games are the way the NHL TV broadcast is, or the TV contract is, those games are on Monumental too, and you'd rather just watch Joe B. And like, why wouldn't you watch Joe B? And Locker. Those guys are awesome. Joe B has called national games. Like, he is one of the best hockey announcers in the game. And so if you can have a broadcast that not only has the institutional knowledge of, I watch this team every night and have for 30 years, combined with Joe's skill, combined with the fact that the goal of the broadcast is to talk more about the Capitals because it's the Capitals broadcast. Capitals fans are watching. And then you go to a national broadcast and you are used to that, a professional grade. And it's one thing if, like, there are some other announced teams in local sports that are very clearly biased towards their team. Like, where you're like, oh, okay, y'all are some homers. And fans don't really want homers either. That's the other thing. But if you are just a hometown announcer who's really good at the job, Joe B on the Capitals, if you're ever in New York and you watch a Knicks game on local TV, the Mike Breen that calls games for MSG is different than the Mike Breen that calls games for ESPN, even though it's the same guy, because he's going to talk more about the Knicks. Same thing on Yes Network. If you get Ian Eagle calling a game for TNT, it's going to be a different call than if he's on Yes Network calling Nets games as the hometown announcer, because his responsibility is to the home fans. And so I think people confuse doing a neutral job for doing a biased job. They're very different. They're very, very different. And I personally do not find the broadcast on ESPN upsetting, biased, bad. Like, I think Sean's great. His control of the game is phenomenal considering how much is happening. He gets it right, I think, between talking and giving us the information and letting it breathe. But yes, it's not constant Capitals discussion, because why would it be? It's a national broadcast. He's got to give time to the other team too. And the fact that Caps fans are up in arms, I think is genuinely hilarious, because the other thing that tends to happen is, I never realized that guy was so biased until my team was involved. And so here's the test. Here's ultimately what you should do. If you think a broadcaster is bad or biased, watch them on a neutral game. Watch McDonough and Ferraro on a game that's not the Capitals. And if you still think they stink, fine. They're not your cup of tea. And this is subjective as well. Like, this is art, not science. No one is saying, I can explain to you fundamentally why Sean McDonough is a great broadcaster, based off of how I would teach someone to do play-by-play. But ultimately, like, there is a taste to it. Some people, you know, I think Sean or Ian Eagle or these guys are great, and you might be like, nope, not my cup of tea. I like insert other broadcaster here that I don't like. I'm not going to call on anybody that's not my favorite. But if you watch that broadcaster on a team or on a game where you're not invested in one of the teams, and the only time you think they're bad is when they're calling your team, that's a you problem, not a them problem. And I bet you, for a lot of people complaining about McDonough and Ferraro on ESPN, it's that. If you were to watch them call Edmonton, Winnipeg, you'd be like, yeah, this is enjoyable. But it's not Joe B. And look, I would love to have the option to watch Joe B. But that's not how it goes, which is something, by the way, we talked about with Joe B yesterday, which you can listen to, in our podcast feed. Just search the Hoffman Show and, scroll on back down to our chat pregame yesterday with the great Joe Beninati. When we get back here on the Hoffman Show, new docuseries on ESPN, parts 1 and 2 are out now. Parts 3 and 4 drop this weekend on the season that was in women's college basketball. They did this last year featuring Caitlin Clark, and we were lucky enough to talk to Kristen Lapis about it last year. New director for season 2, and it features the series this year, Kiki Iriafin, new Mystics draftee. So, we'll talk to the director of season 2 of Full Court Press next here on the Hoffman Show.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Our pleasure to be joined now by Nikki Spetsera. She is the director of Full Court Press, season 2, available now. Episodes 3 and 4 coming out this weekend on ESPN+. And Nikki, it's great to have you. We talked to Kristen about season 1 last year. And this year we have a Washington Mystic that was featured. Is Kiki Iriafin, finished her career at USC, as you documented, and then wound up here in D.C. I want to start a little broader and just ask you about what it was like to cover the 3 programs you did. It's Flauje Johnson at LSU. It's Hannah Hidalgo at Notre Dame, and it's Kiki at USC. And I feel like they're 3 great programs with 3 great coaches, but they're all very distinct and different in kind of how the program is and how the programs are built. So what was it like to cover, you know, LSU, this traditional college town style program, Notre Dame with Niel and the dynamic energy she brings, and then Lindsey Gottlieb, kind of this coach's coach at USC, they're right there in the middle of LA?
Yeah, you bring up a great point. I think that covering 3 different programs, 3 different coaches, 3 different athletes is you can't approach every scenario the same way. So I think, you know, while maybe Coach Gottlieb let us into the locker room right away, let us mic her at practice, we had to build that trust a little bit more with Coach Mulkey. And we got that access eventually, but we kind of had to, you know, take baby steps and, there's more protocols at LSU. There's more rules set in place. They've been, you know, kind of the top of the women's game the last many years. And the last years, Kim Mulkey has been there. And I think with Coach Gottlieb, you know, she's excited to get more eyes on the program. And that is kind of a new thing, right? So I think, yeah, just how we approach building that trust and even filming on the ground was different. And then obviously their personalities come across differently on camera and how they run practices, how they run their locker rooms. All that stuff was really interesting to watch.
I do want to spend as much of our time as we can on Kiki, as she's here in DC now. But we also have Sonia Citron, who obviously is going to be a supporting character in some way to Hannah Hidalgo's story. What did you notice about Sony in your time around the Notre Dame program? And it's talking to people there, they love her. Nielle was so complimentary, and all of her teammates. So I'm guessing you're going to have probably good things to say about Sony, because if not, you'd be the first person I ever met who didn't. But what did you notice about Sonia Citron in your time around the Notre Dame program?
I mean, to be honest, we didn't talk to her that much, but we were there for a lot of games and practices. And, you know, personally, I found Notre Dame to be one of the most exciting teams to watch, particularly in the beginning of the season. Obviously, they had that big win against USC and then UConn. But yeah, Sonia, they had the star-powered team with Hannah and Olivia. Maybe Sonia didn't get as much recognition as she should have, but she was right up there every game, you know, hitting threes, getting steals, and super fun to watch. And I can't wait to watch her next season in the W.
Yeah, for sure. We're excited to have her here in DC. So for Kiki, you're around her for 5 seconds. And you're like, this is a dynamic superstar of a person. it doesn't take long. So I'm sure you knew some about her to pick her as one of the featured athletes to begin with. But as you get around Kiki Ariafin, what starts to stand out to you what stands out to you about her as you're initially getting to know her?
Yeah, I mean, she has such poise and grace. She's so articulate. She's so thoughtful. Really, she makes, you know, for people like you and I, our jobs easy. I think what I really respected about her is, she was just very raw and vulnerable for our cameras. I think particularly that Notre Dame loss in the beginning of the season, we obviously followed that from Hannah's side and from Kiki's side. And that was a tough loss for the team, but particularly for Kiki. I think there was a lot of pressure to perform transferring. And, you know, there was some social media backlash after that game. And you know, she had some self-doubt. She had some struggles. And we kind of built that trust with her where we explained that it's not just the highs that we want to show, right? You need to show the highs and lows, and that's what makes you relatable, and that's what makes people care. And obviously that makes like young people know that you struggle too, right? And she opened up for our cameras, and she gave us a really kind of raw, intimate interview, and she was a little teary-eyed, and I respected that about her. She kind of just knew that she had to put it all out there, and that's really what the goal of the documentary was, to capture all angles of her life.
Nikki Spitzbaris, the director of Full Court Press Season 2, is with us. I kind of chuckle, Nikki, as you say, show young people like Hannah and Kiki and Flage are young people. And I remember talking to Kristen about this last year, and like the sense of responsibility to you're a documentarian, you're a journalist. So you want to show as raw as you can, but there's also got to be an instinct to say, these are young women. Like how intrusive, for lack of a better word, do I want to be? How did you try to find that balance here in season two with this particular group?
Yeah, I think as a filmmaker, I mean, it matters what age person the person you're following is, but I do think you just always try to lead your team, lead your project, lead your directing with the same core values, which is over communicate, be transparent. I think if we knew we wanted to have a tough conversation on camera, you know, we wouldn't just ask that on camera. We're not trying to have the gotcha moments. We would, you know, and some of our producers that were with the women day in and day out, they were really friendly with the parents and with the siblings. And, you know, you kind of just immerse yourself in their world and build that trust little by little. But I do think you just try to say why you think a particular conversation or scene is important to the story and really talk that out. And I think all the women bought in, even when it was difficult things to talk about.
you mentioned their personality starting to shine through, and I could tell even in episode one, right? Flage, her camera awareness is very much there. She's a performer. Like, for those that don't know, Flage Johnson, the LSU point guard, also a very successful rap career, like real, not like athlete doing rap. Like, she is an actual artist, and thus that performer, I feel like, comes through. Hannah's fire, bite, competitiveness, whatever word you want to use, like, I feel like that comes through, and this genuineness from Kiki comes through as well. How did you try to maybe lean into those personalities at times, but also make sure that you don't box them in and present them as singular characters versus the dynamic young people that they are?
Yeah, I really think making a series, that is the hardship, is you have to keep kind of taking a step back to think, how are these stories working together? Are we giving fair airtime and importance to each story? And then kind of chart the arc through the four episodes, right? Like, you know, if we tell the story about Kiki, you know, in episode one and two, having this hard loss, then, you know, how did she build from that, right? So I think just really, we're always talking, we're always thinking, we're always talking to the athletes. I think that, and you just let them be them. There, Flage gives an interview in the last episode where she's really, I think it's her best interview of the series. She's so raw and real, but one of my favorite parts is in the middle of the interview, she's at her family's home and her little brothers are running around. And typically you want a quiet interview, but we were like, you know what? This is her. This is her life. Let's just let her brothers run around. Let's let it be hectic. And in the middle of the interview, she literally screams to her brothers, like, stop running around. I'm doing an interview. And it kind of breaks that third wall, but it also is hilarious, and it's her. So we did try to just let them be them and capture that.
What was your favorite moment with Kiki in the series?
Oh, wow. Oh, you know, the draft night stuff with Kiki was really special. You'll see that in episode four. You know, she represented her culture with this Nigerian designer. Her mom was there. She had her whole glam squad. And it was really cool to be behind the scenes with her and her family for, you know, such a momentous night and a dream come true for her.
Yeah, I'm very excited, obviously, for being in DC, considering that's where she wound up getting to see that at the end. Last thing I'll ask you is, because I believe I talked about this with Lindsay. We had Coach Gottlieb on the show after Kiki got drafted. But the moment where Juju goes down and kind of the conversations that happened between Lindsay and Kiki and the team and the aftermath of that, what were those moments like? Because that's as hard of a moment as you can have in sports. It's a human moment, not just a sports moment. But the way Kiki responded on the floor was unbelievable. So what was that moment like to wrap us up here?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, you know, obviously our feelings are with Juju and that team. But yeah, on the ground, I mean, you're starting to call your producers and your camera people, and you're trying to figure out, okay, what do we follow? I know this is difficult, but we need to talk to Coach after. We need to talk to Kiki after. So it is definitely like a pivot as a filmmaker, but I think Kiki, again, how she played in that game was amazing to document, and how she stepped up and led her team, but also in the aftermath heading into the Sweet 16, we talked with her in her hotel room, you know, when the news came out of what had really happened to Juju, and, you know, Kiki just, as an upperclassman, really tried to help lead her team and also support Juju from afar. So seeing that behind the scenes was really incredible.
Nikki Spitzeris is the director of Full Court Press Season 2. It's available now on ESPN Plus, episode 3 and 4 coming out this weekend. Nikki, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it. And a great job with at least episode 1 that I've watched so far.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right, that's Nikki Spitzeris with us here on The Hoffman Show. When we get back, there was nearly another trade on draft night for the NFL between Adam Peters and Howie Roseman. Of course, a pretty infamous one last year, but it didn't go down this time. Why? We now have the behind-the-scenes audio, and Adam Peters talking about it in an interview, so we'll get to that next here on the Team 980. It's The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. Always live as well on the Free Odyssey app. Have I been practicing my Duolingo Spanish for a work-related reason? That's the tease for what's coming up in 10 minutes. un momento, and you'll find out. But I want to talk about what happened in the 2025 NFL draft, or more in more accurately, what didn't happen in the 2025 NFL draft. To do that, let's rewind back a year, 2024. Howie Roseman of the Eagles dials up Adam Peters of the Commanders and says, hey, I want to come up. And Adam is like, sweet, I want to go down. They make a little swipsy-swapsy trade. And next thing you know, the Eagles have Cooper DeJean. Commanders have Mike Sainer still. They have Ben Sinnott. They get some draft capital swappage later in the draft. And so far, have the Eagles, quote-unquote, won that trade? Sure. Cooper DeJean was incredible. He was a huge part of their Super Bowl victory. And in that way, like, pretty hard to overcome. But Cooper's a very, very good player. But the Commanders needed a lot of stuff. And it would also be a lot easier to swallow, I think, for Commanders fans if Sinnott had worked out. And sometimes you miss on prospects. But it's also early. Sinnott could still very well be an excellent player for them in the long term. It's only year two. And if it takes 1 year for a second-round pick to turn into a very good player, that's really not that long of a time to wait at all. We'll see. Ben Sinnott's year two gets started in earnest, and OTAs coming up here in just a couple of weeks. But for the Commanders, that caused a lot of questions of should you be trading with the Eagles anyway. I think a lot of people around the league, whether you're in their division or not, whether you're playing in the NFC Championship game or not, are like, should we ever do business with Howie Roseman? Seems like it doesn't go well. And so this year, as the Commanders are on the clock again, the Eagles see presumably Jahad Campbell falling in the draft and go, dang, we want to go get this kid, the kid who they ultimately drafted at 31 when they swap places with the Chiefs, who they, of course, beat in the Super Bowl. But they try to get up to 29 first, and the Eagles actually released the audio of this call in a behind-the-scenes series. Everybody does them now, but team media on YouTube put out a kind of Eagles draft day behind the scenes, and here's how that call with Adam Peters went down.
How many picks are we in? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
We have the sixth.
We have the sixth player.
And we have the sixth guy.
Oh, we got six guys.
Yeah.
Where are you? Hey, buddy. How we doing? Yeah, it's a tradition.
Howie Roseman, just, hey, you know you're up to no good when you lead with the, hey, buddy. Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy. How we doing? Yeah, it's a tradition. I feel like we should keep it even short. Any interest in a small move back? Let's see. He said there's an in-division tax. He really didn't want to do a trade with me.
In the 2025 NFL Draft, the Washington Commanders select Josh Connerly, Jr.
Here we go.
Tackle, Oregon.
Still okay. Connerly.
That's a great pick.
Yep.
So that's how it sounded in the Eagles war room. It doesn't sound like, because it has been made out at times, I think, that the Eagles took, or the Commanders took the Eagles guy. I don't think that's what happened. I think Campbell was their guy. But from one, we hope, great GM to another, and really, you know, Howie Roseman's already got his Super Bowl trophies. We know he's a great GM, but looks like Adam Peters is pretty darn good at this too. It's kind of a hat tip from Howie to be like, hey, man, great pick. If I'm Adam, and I wonder why, like, of course, in division tax, that is a thing, right? And while I think that can be confusing, because I know some of you guys have listened to me and argued with me before, whether it's online or on the phones, about you should never trade within your division. It's like, well, if you could make it worth your while. And last year, the Commanders got a bunch of picks back for the Eagles moving up. They made it worth their while. They did pick swaps and they did other stuff too. So it wasn't, you know, like a 3-for-1, but I think the Commanders picked up a pick in that trade, which is really valuable. Part of the reason you're seeing all these pick swaps for late round trades is teams don't want to give up the actual pick. They are a number of pick, right? If everything's a lottery ticket, you don't want to give up a lottery ticket, even if your lottery ticket by moving down in a round might come with worse odds. You'd rather do that and have the points, you know, they have all these trade charts, have the points work out that way than, oh, I gave you a pick, even if it's a seventh rounder. Teams are much more likely to do the pick swap deal. And so yes, you have to consider what is this going to do for a team that I'm going to face twice a year. And if you're Washington now at this point, after what you did last year, you're hoping three times a year. You're hoping you see Philly again in the playoffs, and this time you can beat them. And you know that you have to go through that team. So for Washington this year, they loved Connerly. It was going to take a lot to move them off that spot. They wanted to stick and pick. And you're making the calculation, if you are Adam Peters, if we don't take him, and we've been sweating since 10, we thought that there was a chance the Bears could take Josh Connerly at 10. And we know that other teams are going to be calling around. We're getting towards the end of the first round. Tackle's really thin. We know Buffalo could look that direction, even though they're probably set at tackle. But what if they see him as a guard and they go that direction at 30, right after you? Or another team trades up. You know how he's fishing around. You know he's always looking for linemen. What if he wants Josh Connerly? And maybe Adam could have asked him, like, who are you coming up for? Well, we want Campbell. Okay. Let's party. But that's how we would probably be like, I'm not telling you that, right? Sometimes teams talk and you know, hey, if this guy's still available at pick X, call me. We'll make a deal. We're coming up. In this particular case, because it's just a couple of picks and because they're division rivals, Adam was like, make it worth my time. Like, this car is not for sale unless you offer me so much money that I can go buy another one. And that's kind of, I feel like, how they treated it. And Adam was actually on the Pat McAfee show earlier in the week and was asked about the intricacies of doing deals in division, which they did two last year, remember? Not only did they do the draft day trade, they did the Jahan Dotson trade as well, of doing trades with the Eagles specifically.
Clips are coming out now from the draft, and this one was actually from the Eagles YouTube team, I believe, and it was basically Howie Roseman calling you to try and trade up, and I don't know if it was your idea or if this came from R&D, but Howie basically hung up and said, Mr. Peters is going to be charging an in-division tax when it comes to trading up. Was that actually a real conversation? What were you charging, Howie? Was this, you know, like a late-round pick, an extra one, or were you asking for, like, hey, you're going to need to give us, like, a Jalen Carter if you want to come up here?
That was actually me busting his chops and on TV for because he did that to me. And so that part they left out. But my first time talking to Howie, he was trying to trade me a player last offseason. It was like the first phone call we had. He's like, yeah, well, we can do this or that. But, you know, because you're in division, there's a tax. You're going to have to pay a little more. And so that was just me throwing it back at him. And we were just joking around about it. But it's actually really funny. He's a great guy. He's a great GM, obviously. And he's awesome to deal with. We've done two deals already together and probably do more. But, it was just us back and forth having fun.
And so, yeah, like, they're joking, they're having fun, but, like, let's not pretend like both guys aren't a little bit serious. Like, both guys aren't a little bit like, hey, like, you got to make it worth my while. Like, if I'm going to do business with you, we're both going to have to win here. And I think that's the thing. To give up Josh Connerly, Adam Peters was going to make sure that it was worth his while. And I think at that point, with the risk that they were willing to take, and I do think it's interesting. The last like, really interesting thing that I take out of this is, I think Howie Roseman thought Adam Peters would like Jahad Campbell. And that was a guy that, as he was falling, I was like, ooh, I could see them taking Jahad Campbell as an edge. But obviously, Adam went in a different direction. Howie got his guy. Adam got his guy. And those two guys will be running helmet first into each other for the next half decade, at least probably, in the NFC East. When we get back here on the Hoffman Show, are the Commanders heading overseas? Do we believe the schedule leak that came out? And if you haven't heard it, we'll tell you what it is next on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too, at the Team 980. 6 o'clock, rookie camp preview with Logan Paulson. 6:15, we'll talk to one of the coaches of one of the rookies in 2025, Jalen Lanes, former coach from Virginia Tech, Stu Holt, who coached him on special teams and on the offensive side of the ball. Pedro, Anthony. Vamos al España?
We're going to Spain?
That's the question. Are we going to Spain? I my future tense in Spanish is not very good.
So if you wanted to say we are going,
I think you can just go vamos out of Spain. Out of España.
But I think so. Maybe.
My confidence in my Spanish just went to an all-time low. So that's great. But I am on Duolingo. I am at what level?
You're doing Spanish?
Yeah, I've been doing Spanish since I got back from France last year. I was like, French and I don't get along, and I'm going to stop pretending. I don't need all this. Also, have you heard that like Duolingo's in hot water because they're doing a lot of AI stuff now and people are mad about it?
Oh, no, that's bad stuff. No, I didn't know that.
I do feel like their product has gotten worse, which is not ideal. I'm a level 20 Spanish. I don't know how many levels there are, but clearly there's a lot if I'm level 20 and I can barely say basic stuff. The point is, there's a report that came out from a TV station down in Miami, and the Dolphins are definitely playing in Week 11 in Madrid next year at the home of Real Madrid, the, of course, world-famous soccer team. The question is, who are they going to play? And the Commanders, I would assume, are very high on that list for the NFL. This is the first ever game in Spain, and if you put Jaden Daniels level talent there, people are going to be pretty excited. And the problem is for the NFL is like every Commanders game is kind of a barn burner this year. You like some of the worst games on the schedule are Commanders Giants. And it's like, oh, NFC East rivals for 100 years. What a terrible game. Especially if like Jackson Dart is playing and you have a rookie quarterback, which everybody loves. So figuring out like who the Commanders primetime opponents are, I'm sure, is one of the things that the NFL had to kind of figure out as they finalize the schedule ahead of Wednesday's release. And we will get more leaks and more official reports too. It would not surprise me if Monday there's an official drop of all the international games, but the Commanders could open the season. They could open the season against the Eagles on Thursday night. Cause obviously that would be a barn burner bang up matchup. You've got the, Friday night game, Chargers in Brazil. They could do that. They're on the list for the Dolphins in Madrid. And then you've got games like, do they just go play the Chiefs at Arrowhead on a Monday night or a Sunday night or whatever? But Anthony, if you could pick any of the internationals, and we'll open this up to pretend the Commanders could play in Germany, England, Spain, Brazil. That's where all the games are, right? I didn't miss one?
I think that's all.
I think that's all of them. Which one would you rather go to?
All right, so I'm going to be selfish. One, because I'm going to Spain this summer, so I wouldn't choose Spain because I'm going there this summer.
Well, that's fair. That's totally fair.
Does Mexico count as South America?
No, Mexico's in North America. Your geography teachers are really mad, but it is international if there's a because there is, I don't know if there's a Mexico game this year. I think there is. But like, if you say Mexico is your trip, you can make it your trip, but that doesn't make it part of South America.
No, well, I haven't been to South America yet. I haven't been to that continent yet. So I'm okay. Going to Europe this summer. I've been to Africa. I've been to North America, obviously. So I will be selfish and go to Brazil because then I will have hit 4 out of the 7 continents.
That is a cool fact. That is like a great fun fact for Anthony. Yeah. The problem is, I don't think you want to go to Brazil. Like, Brazil, there's a lot of great things about it.
Yeah.
I just happen to know that like when the NFL went there last year, that let's just say the security around NFL personnel was very, very high.
But the thing is, people
were not encouraged to explore.
I think I'm a regular person though. I'm not, you know, a celebrity. I'm not going to be wearing chains and all types of.
You have to be very careful of what colors you wear.
Yeah, that. I mean, I would be mindful of that as well. And then, yeah, I think I would probably just, you know, stay in a resort. I mean, I would go explore a little bit, but, you know, I would stay with my group.
I would like to go to Brazil at a different time in my life.
Okay.
I was actually talking to a friend of mine who's done quite a bit of travel the other day, and she was telling me that we were talking about how there's no good red eyes, that like you're always stuck in a weird time, whatever. And she's like, actually going to South America is the best because it takes forever to get there because it's very far away. But you don't wind up changing time zones in the way you do when you go to Europe or even if you cross North America, like east to west or west to east. And so you wind up like just having an 8-hour flight. You sleep as much as you can on the plane and you wake up and it's like the correct time.
Okay.
So that's positive to South America.
Yeah, that ain't bad. I think that's where I would go, though.
Okay.
Where are you going?
Such a great question because Germany's very high on my list. And they've had the football for a couple of years now, and so they kind of have they've got a good atmosphere. They know what they're doing.
You know any German? Do you know any German?
Very little. Rachel's Duolingo is currently set to German, though.
Oh wow! I know how to say 1, 2, 3. Ein, zwei, drei.
I got like hello. Dankeschön. Yeah, no, that's about all I got. So I can say hello, thank you, and then I'll let Rachel take care of everything else.
Yeah.
Also, they speak English in the parts that we'd probably be going to, especially if we're going to a bunch of NFL stuff. Madrid, like I haven't been to Madrid, so I would like to go. I would love to go to Spain. There's definitely a chance that I am going to go to Spain in the fall, because we have friends that are getting married in Portugal, and so if we do a little trip ski before or after, Spain is an obvious place to go. But I do love London.
Mm.
I do love, like, but 4 days, I left London going, I don't want to leave London. I just want to live here. Now, it did help that it was my honeymoon and I didn't have to work. And it was like, we ate in great restaurants and did things you do on your honeymoon. But I was like, this place is where I belong. So I might have to go back to London and try to get a job and then just not come back. Seems based off my Spanish versus my English. Seems like I got a better chance of that than going to Spain.
A safer bet, for sure.
CC. All right, when we get back, Logan and I preview Commanders rookie camp going down this weekend.